deep secret that the armorer hadn't even dared admit to himself.
Doc, I don't know. I can't see to the left all that well.
To the right?
Even worse.
Yet straight on?
I see good. Perfect with those lenses you tried out.
The loss of some of your peripheral vision. Is it like looking down a tunnel at times, Mr. Dix?
Yeah, exactly. Some days it doesn't bother me at all. Other times I have to be careful. Hasn't been life-threatening yet.
I fear it will be, depending on when it flares up and what your situation entails. Have you told anyone about the problem? Your lady companion?
No.
Why not?
Why worry her? I use my eyes constantly. Last thing my friends need is a half-blind buddy dog in their heels.
J.B. glared at the blurry image of Clark he could see before him.
You know what this is, don't you?
Without proper testing, I can't be sure.
So do the test.
I can't. I would need a measurement of the intraocular pressure of the eye to be able to say for sure. The process is called tonometry, and it involves a special probe, and I don't have the device. Even if I did, I'm not sure how to perform the test correctly. Your cornea would have to be anesthetized, for one thing, and such procedures are beyond me.
So what's causing the problem?
Clark stood up and opened a cabinet, removing a well-worn green hardcover book with full-color illustrations of the human eye. He opened to a page and pointed at the diagrams.
High pressure inside the eye causes damage to the optic nerve, Mr. Dix. Your eyes, all of our eyes, have a remarkable drainage system. Fluid comes in and goes out from within the eyeball, keeping the pressure consistent and higher than that of the outside atmosphere, so the eye doesn't collapse.
Like diving when you're underwater. Come up too fast, you get the bends.
Yes, like that. What has happened here is that your drainage system has gotten clogged. Continual pressure creates a subsequent loss of the visual field, which is what is creating your tunnel vision. This condition is called glaucoma. And it sounds like you've progressed beyond the early stages.
Dark night.
When J.B. spoke the words, even he was aware of the black humor the epithet now held. He grimaced.
It's not your fault, Mr. Dix. The process is gradual and insidious. You might have decided your continual loss of sight was due to age or old glasses. It's not like you woke up one morning completely blind and had to deal with the problem that way. From what I've read and the other cases I've encountered, there isn't a damn thing you could have done to stop it from happening.
No cure?
There were medicines once. Eye drops, even surgery. All lost. I can tell you what needs to be done, but I can't help you in doing it. New glasses, yes. Those I can find. Surgery or medicine? No. I'm not trained, and I don't have the drugs.
Yeah, pulling the glasses off a dead man's eyes doesn't take that much in the way of brains.
I perform a service. You don't have to get nasty about my methods. There are no longer any one-hour eyeglass manufacturing stores. I'm telling you like it is. Without more tests, I'd still be guessing to the extent of the damage. From the journals I've studied, this disorder is so highly individualistic that treatment had to be specifically tailored to each patient's condition.
There's got to be something I can do to stop this.
Well, there is, to a small degree. Existing nerve fiber damage is irreversible, but you can try and slow down any further injury. Some people have higher than normal pressure in their eyes due to their blood pressure, alcohol abuse, and stress. You need to keep the pressure down as best as you can manage.
My blood pressure's okay, and I'm not an alky, but I tend to spend a whole lot of my life under stress.
I can tell you that one characteristic of the disease is that pressure within the eye is caused due to changes in the rate of aqueous humor formation.
What's that?
The fluid buildup, Mr. Dix. It fluctuates during the day. Usually high in the morning, less as the day goes on, and it declines during the night. When you're sleeping, it declines even more.
How long? How long until I go completely blind?
There's no way of knowing. A year, 10 years, 20, all cases are different. With treatment, we could end this immediately. Without it, who can say?
Well, a man I used to know once told me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm still one of the best shots in Deathlands, and by God, that's something. And I still see pretty damn good, too. Or I will, once you fix me up with some new specs.
Yes, I can do that.
The armorer pulled out the twisted remains of his other frames and handed them to the doctor.
Why don't you find some that look like these?
I'll do my best.
And, Dr. Clark, this is our little secret.
Very well.
The wooden sign that ran along the length of the storefront was painted in bright hues of orange, green, and blue, with cutout sound effect icons such as Pow and Biff and Zonk decorating the corners in a three-dimensional effect. The colors made Dean's eyes widen, Christy and Ryan looked bemused, Jack looked bored, and Doc winced like his eyes hurt.
It says the collector's closet. Why are they spelling it with K's?
Yet another example of the wretched spelling to be found across Deathlands. Eventually, I fear the human race will ultimately regress to painting pictographs in dyes made of blood and dung on dank cave walls.
And fighting with clubs and stones, huh, Doc?
Indeed. The world will run out of ammunition sooner or later.
I don't think the guy who runs this place is that stupid, Doc. I think the owner is trying to make some kind of statement.
None of the group could see inside the store very well, since the front display windows and door were covered in layers and layers of old faded paper posters, featuring drawings of colorfully attired characters with names like Wolverine and Batman. It was hard to fully read any of the advertisement in the collage-like display. It seemed that once one poster had served out its time in the shop's display, the owner merely pasted up another on top instead of taking down the earlier one, giving the windows a curious checkerboard pattern of overlapping designs. Dean leaned forward to read the posters.
The X-Men. Mutant hope in a world gone mad. 20 monthly titles for your reading excitement. Only from the House of Ideas. What a load of crap. Those guys in the funny suits are norms. They sure aren't like any muties I ever saw.
Nor are any of those women.
But they sure got mutant tits.
Wait. I have heard of this Batman. He was what they once called a superhero. His costume was worn to strike terror into the hearts of evil men.
No kidding, Doc? Was he a fancy sec man or what?
No, Ryan. You must understand. Batman was a fictional creation who appeared in comic books for the delight of the under-18 set.
Meaning?
Children's entertainment.
We've got time. You want to go in for a look, Dean? Better than standing out here in the mall with our thumbs up our asses waiting for JB.
Yeah! All right! Thanks, Dad!
Before the boy could open the door to the store, Ryan held out a hand.
Hold up. The window's so crowded we can't see in. Let me take a quick look first.
He pulled open the glass entrance and stuck his head through. He felt half silly doing a wreck inside a place obviously designed to be a spot for the entertainment of halfwits and children, but he knew from hard experience that nothing was ever as it seemed in the Deathlands. Still, he wasn't ready for a sight such as this. From floor to ceiling were off-white cardboard boxes filled with magazines, wall pegs adorned with packaged miniature toys and games, racks of compact discs and black vinyl LPs, and an array of other colorful debris that Ryan didn't even pretend to recognize. Even the surface of the drop ceiling was adorned with more of the posters as seen on the front of the establishment. Ryan stepped through the glass door into the morass, and the others followed in his wake. Christy blinked at the piles and piles of boxes.
Wasn't kidding about the closet part in the name of this place. Gonna be crowded in here.
You feel anything?
Just claustrophobic. Only danger here, as far as I can tell, is maybe having something fall on you.
You break it, you bought it, darling.
Wow, look at all this stuff.
Dean pressed forward along the small pathway that wound its way along the store's contents to the back counter.
Oh, that smell. Wait, let me place it in the proper context.
Yeah. Stinks. Smells like sweat.
Yeah, Jack, somebody needs to wash their ass.
No, I speak not of the stench of unwashed flesh, young codder. I'm talking about the heavenly aroma of old paper, rotting pulp.
Dust, you mean?
Christy ran a finger along a box top and brought it up, coated with fine dirt. The smell was unfamiliar. In the Deathlands, it was quite unusual to find much in the way of printed material, new or old. The larger vills might have their own little news sheets run off antique printing presses. Doc had spied a version of this in Freedom and had happily grabbed one up in search of any printed information, only to find it was a series of advertisements for the endless array of mall stores. But in the poorer sections, more often than not, paper was viewed as nothing more than useful kindling or toilet tissue. As for older, pre-dark vintage books and magazines, most of the paper goods had long since crumbled into dust due to the abnormal weather conditions around the globe, or vanished into nothingness in the long nuclear winter immediately following Skydark. There were rare exceptions, the odd baron with a hoard of books. A fair estimate of the general populace of Deathlands would probably put most men and women in the category of the functionally illiterate. There was no time for reading for the enjoyment of books, nor was there a viable system of delivering written letters or messages. Written contracts with signatures were a thing of the past, except for barons who delighted in thrusting papers down for hired help to make their signature mark, without even knowing what agreements such contracts contained. Collector's Closet contained the most pulp paper any of the group had ever seen. One wall was devoted to bagged examples of horror magazines. Ryan's eye traveled over the lurid covers before one caught his complete and undivided attention. Jack frowned at Ryan, concerned. He hadn't cared much for this shop from the beginning, and now Ryan's mirth was starting to set him more on edge. Ryan rarely laughed, unless it was in irony or bitterness.
You okay?
Ryan grinned, his blue eye dancing with amusement. He nodded toward the wall of monster magazines.
Check out the one on the bottom left there. Does the ghoul on the front and the fancy knee breeches look familiar to anybody besides me?
Unable to contain his curiosity, Doc bent over and peered intently at the indicated magazine cover. The colors were lurid green on mustard yellow. The center of the cover was dominated by a tall, spindly man dressed in a long greenish coat with a lean face, hawk nose, and thinning white hair. The man was waving a hand in a gesture of entry into the magazine's interior.
Creepy, creepy magazine.
Doc, it also says here that Uncle Creepy welcomes you inside.
Yes, yes, I see that. What I am missing is the implied humor.
That Uncle Creepy, he looks just like you, Doc.
Nonsense. This fellow looks nothing like the proud countenance of...
Quiet, somebody's in the back. I guess the guy who owns the place finally decided to make an appearance.
Ryan's words were proven true when a fat, bearded man waddled out from a back room and took up a stance behind the long row of glass showcases. He looked to be carrying about 300-plus pounds on his 5-foot-4-inch frame. His hair was long and greasy and appeared to have been dyed a phony jet black that never existed in nature. His beard was also the same unnatural color of night. He wore a t-shirt, two sizes too small, and on the shirt was a picture of a tall man with pointed ears, spouting the command, "Live long and prosper." Some dark brown gravy stains also adorned the shop owner's attire, above the moon-white expanse of flesh visible between his shirt tail and waistband. Ryan kept expecting him to knock over one of the many precariously stacked piles of books, toys, and junk with either his wide ass or wider stomach, but he was nimble and seemed to possess an uncanny sense of grace when it came to navigating the store's many possessions.
Greetings and salutations! My name is Chet. I'm the proprietor of this, my humble establishment. Welcome to the finest array of pre-dark comics and collectibles on the East Coast. If we don't have what you're looking for, we can find it for you with our search service for a small fee.
More fees.
Pardon me, I cannot help but notice you deal in paper goods.
Whoa, you are quite the elder. Hey, anybody ever tell you you look just like Uncle Creep?
No, No, they have not.
Okay, man, a guy your age, I bet you've got a bitchin' collection.
Only of memories, my rotund friend. And those are getting harder and harder to find as time goes on. Alas, I now have no place to call home to keep my possessions. All I have is what I carry.
Say, that's a real flashback of a Mac Daddy frock coat you're wearing. Very retro. Get you an ascot or neck kerchief, and you'd be humming.
Before you ask, no, my coat is not for sale, especially to one such as yourself.
Suit yourself. I wouldn't give it up either. My problem is finding clothes that'll fit my fat ass.
That's what tailors are for, my good man.
Tailors cost jack. Any jack I get, I spend on collecting. All the good stuff's going up in value. Used to be, I put the word out for baseball cards or comic books, and within a month I'd have more than I could handle from outlanders and wanderers going back and forth across Deathlands. Now my best pickers can't find dick anymore. Everybody thinks this stuff is worth a fortune, and I can't afford to pay top jack, then turn it around and make a profit anymore.
Supply and demand.
Exactly. All the stores in the mall are occupied, so I can't demand a break in my rent. Instead, I must weather the annual rent increases. Do you know what rent goes for in freedom?
I've seen enough. Let's go.